remix.
Welcome along to Disney World Podcast, episode 16. As ever, I'm Greg.
I'm Ricardos.
Ricardos is Greek today.
I'm Timarcho.
Oh, God. Okay, coming up on this week's episode, we have Reading, Watching, Playing, as ever. We have news, and we have a feature called Perfect 10, which goes surprisingly well.
And you're all Perfect 10s if you're listening.
Awesome. Ding us out, Tommy.
Yes.
Lovely.
It's a staple part of any healthy diet. On this podcast, anyway, listen to this podcast. It's Reading, Watching, Playing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go first this week. I'm going to go for reading. And my reading's coming on leaps and bounds these days, which is great. I was reading Witches on the Bus here, which is a fantastic read so far. But what I'm going to be covering is Swamp Thing Volume 2, Family Tree, by Scott Snyder, and Yannick Paquette does a bit of the artwork for it. He does a lot of the really, really cool starting artwork for, like, the first couple of issues, I think it is. Yeah. This bit. And Swamp Thing is ace. Swamp Thing is brilliant.
Like, Tommy's converted you.
Aye, absolutely. Well, yeah, like, Tommy saw an opportunity to make a believer of of me. And he fully has. Like, I've been converted to the church of Swamp Thing.
I bet that's real.
Like, it'll be on a Facebook page by the time we get home. Tommy, he'll be there. Yeah, the editor of it. But it's like, in my eyes, it's providing like one of the most like refreshing comic book reads I've had in ages for any superhero type guy. It's just really cool. It's a really different take on a hero. I really enjoying it. I say that as someone who didn't really know a lot about Swamp Thing in the first place, and it's all pretty much new info to me. But this volume two, it's quite bitty, and it feels a little bit rushed, and it feels like a few different stories squished into one. But I enjoyed every single one of them. Mm. They're all great.
Is it like mini stories? Like,
no,
is it?
It's like it
different parts of a bigger story, basically.
Yeah, it concludes first of all the storyline from the first issue, which is Pit and Swamp Thing in a battle against Seth, who's like this big, dark overlord.
Is that
horrible
the wee boy?
No, that's William.
That's the wee.
I threw that again.
Exactly.
I know my shit. I didn't even have to look at my notes for
No, that's William.
Yes. Seth is like this big, horrible dead entity that is.
He's like the. He seems like an avatar of the rock.
That's, yes.
Like,
yeah.
Swamp Thing's an avatar of the green, mm-hmm. which is the plant leaf.
And to complete the compliment, Animal Man is the red.
Yeah.
So, which I read as well recently, which was really good. But this is all... you learn more about Alec Holland, you learn more about Swamp Thing in general, and it's just kind of, it's fascinating reading something like this, which has got such a rich history, when you know nothing about it. Like, reading more about the Parliament of Trees, that appearance of Animal Man in it, and delving deeper into the mind of Anton Arcane,
which is a mindfuck.
Oh, but yeah, absolutely. There's bits in the background of how Alec Holland meets Abigail Arcane, like when he's a young uni student who travels to an old European town that has problems growing plant life. So much like, you know, any, I don't know, like any Scottish city, really.
unless it's cannabis.
Unless it, yeah. Nah, it's not really. It looks like an old sort of Eastern European town with like a big castle thing that Anton Arcane lives in. But Anton Arcane's this scientist guy from Alec Holland's perspective, but he doesn't know the backstory to Anton Arcane. And you can put the pieces together when you see Anton Arcane being all weird and everything. I've got loads to get through. Sorry, there's Swamp Thing himself. Is a great character, and I don't really know that much about him, and I never really cared to know that much about him, but having read this and having read the first volume and really wanting to read the second, and now really really wanting to read the third, it's really, like I said, it's really refreshing to read something like that, especially in something like a Marvel or DC universe. I know it says DC universe, but reading something where you are just completely taken in by the characters is brilliant. And one of the other things, Anton Arcane, as we've said already, is probably the most evil villain that I've ever read. for the shit he does, man, he's horrible. Like I thought William Arcane was bad in the first issue because of the sort of shit that he does. But there's one thing in particular in the menagerie of terrible things that he does in Something Volume 2 that's worse than the other, and worse than any others. And the only way I can put it without trying to spoil anything, and it'll be a spoiler in itself anyway, but correct me if I'm wrong, Tommy, Anton Arcane can sort of sniff out potential Swamp Thing.
Potential new avatars of the Green before they've become avatars and Green.
Alright, okay.
He can sniff them out at any age.
Right. Alright, okay. Okay.
He can sniff them out when, say, they're in a pediatric infirmary for newborns.
Right.
It's the most fucked up thing. I was reading it just in my flat, and I had to sort of like physically close the comic for a bit and just put it down and go make myself a cup of tea and go like, oh man, oh no, this is, but it just makes Anton Arcane even more interesting to read, because you don't want to see a battle between Swamp Thing and Anton Arcane. You want to see Swamp Thing fucking destroy Anton Arcane. And if anyone's listening to this that hasn't gotten to Swamp Thing before, this is the new 52 stuff. Please do, because it's phenomenal. I could probably talk about this for longer, but I don't know how much have I got a lot more time. Nah. Okay. I'm looking forward to getting more encounters with Animal Man. See that he has an association somewhere in his traditional family tree with the White Lantern Corps, and he also has some sort of working relationship with Constantine, which I'm quite interested to see as well. But overall,
does he not spin off into the Justice League Dark though?
He does at some point, apparently.
Ah, he does.
He's in the book, but it's never referenced in his book.
He comes into it,
he's in the Justice League Dark, but for some reason, apart from Animal Man, there's like very little kind of interaction with the rest of the DC universe. It's very self-contained, which is kind of how it pulls you in as well.
There's a small cast
of characters and they're all really rich.
That's it, and that's a perfect way to put it. It's so small, and it almost seems like an insular story as part of the DC universe that you could almost be reading it as
a standalone.
If it happens in this New 52 that he hangs out with Batman somehow, it'd be like seeing Batman in Breaking Bad or something like that. Like, fucking hell,
that'd be fucking sweet, actually.
It's really cool, and I'd absolutely recommend it.
It was quite like, he's not a guy who wears like spandex and flies about.
That's it. And he's not even a guy.
Yes,
he was, but then he died, and like the entity sort of absorbed all of his thoughts and memories and stuff like that, and made its own sort of vegetable avatar out of him, and it's
a vegetable avatar.
It's cool. It's really cool.
It's a giant magic mushroom just flies about.
But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Cool. Moving on. Tom Berlin, what you got?
Aye.
Or Tommy K.
I have been playing Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh. Ah, right. Can I just quit buzzing here? Because I wanted to ask you about this. I seen you playing it last night.
Yes.
And I was like, how the fuck is he playing that? Have you got that PlayStation rental thing?
Yes.
Ah, right, okay.
You can maybe tie that in as well, see how that's working for you.
Right, I'll touch on it briefly. It's not like a Netflix subscription where you pay a set amount every month. You pay on a game-to-game basis. And there's two options. There's only, like, I don't know, maybe 20 games available on it right now. And it's like, you get two... you get it for a weekend for 2 days. Or you can rent it for 30 days. And for 30 days, Shadow of the Colossus was only $5.99. And for 2 days, it was, like, $2.99 or something.
It's not actually a bad show, considering you could buy yourself a shite game for more and get bored of it after 2 days. So...
Yeah.
That means if you want to play it again, you've got to buy it again.
That's true.
It does.
If it's just an average game, then you've not really lost out. And if it's a really good game like Shadow of the Colossus is apparently meant to be, then...
Smashing. It's an amazing game. It really is.
I don't know how I feel about that, man. I'd rather have it like PSN. Like you pay a subscription, you get it, like Netflix.
But then you don't really get it. You're still renting it. Because if your PSN membership, if you cancel it, you don't have it anymore.
Yeah, I know.
So it's a permanent rental until you stop that subscription.
I know, but I don't know what you mean. Feel about that. It's like global video. It's like going backwards almost. Like you've been back on Tuesday night before 7 o'clock and you used to go down at 7:30 and they'd be like, that's an extra day, son. You went, no, it's an extra 150. Fuck you. I'll take it home again.
I can't even get the bus home now.
Aye. I can't get a mixture. But anyway.
It's streaming as well. It streams.
Does it stream well, does it?
Mine's is like Wi-Fi as well. I've only got like a cable clipped in the back of mine's. But it has slowed down like once or twice.
Oh, right, okay.
Mm. Got a bit like...
A bit like what, sorry? Okay. To make it sure.
So some technical difficulties, but if I did have a cable, I was like, there would be none of that. So I can't fault the service, really.
Well, there you go. Sweet. And the game.
And the game's amazing. I've played it before, but I had it for a rental and it was a Blockbuster Video. It's
like... This is like an echo through history.
And I didn't complete it. I only had it for a couple of days. But yeah, it's a brilliant game. Like, it's absolutely amazing. You know what it's about, though? Yes.
Yeah.
Like, the Colossus. It's like the
free roman thing where you have to hunt down the Colossi and kill them.
Colossi, is that plural? Colossuses?
Colossuses.
I don't know. It's like octopuses, octopi.
Octopuses.
We'll go with it. That sounds good. That sounds good.
Anyway, it's a good game, man. It's amazing, actually. Like, if you've never played it, you should at some point in your life play it. Because I've never played a game like it. I've never played a game like it before it or after it. It's
still to this day you've never played anything like it.
That's
quite high praise, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
That's
shit. It's unique. It's not for everybody, I don't think. But it's basically just all the boss battles, but it's weird because there's no... You're a guy. You're a human. There's no other humans apart from your partner who's dead and who lies on Earth. So nobody else. And then there's small animals kicking around in the little world. But it's just like snakes and some hawks in the sky and stuff like that. And the Colossus are there as well. But the Colossus don't speak to you. And they don't make any... dialogue with you, so you never speak to anybody throughout the thing. Oh, well, you shout at your horse when you want your horse.
Fuck your horse, you bastard! You.
But it's just really weird because there is a story to it, but there's no story cutscenes. There's no dialogue. There's no interaction with the characters.
It's just a guy
on his own.
And I didn't realise that. I thought there would be at least some sort of cutscene action. There you go.
There are cutscenes, but there's no. It happens every time you beat a Colossus, there's a small cutscene, you're back at the shrine, which is in the middle of the world. It's where you start every time. And there's a shadowy, after you beat the first one, there's a shadowy figure standing over you, like that's a proper shadow. While you're unconscious, because you become unconscious after each time you beat the Colossus.
Oh, really?
And as you beat more Colossus, or Colossi, or
whatever,
Colossuses,
whatever it is.
Colossuses.
More shadowy figures are standing over you as you're unconscious in the shrine. So there is a summon going on, but I'm like half out. I've done like nine of the bosses, and there's 16. So I'm sure as I progress further, more will come about. But it really sucks you in, man.
Is it? How does it work? Is it sort of third person? It's third person.
It's third person. Yeah.
Is it all like different boss battles with different game mechanics, or is it all?
There's your character's got very basic mechanics. Each Colossus is designed completely differently. They look. Different. Some are based on animals. Some are based on other things. It's all about climbing and getting on the Colossus and finding the weak spot. Is basically
right.
The puzzle, because they're like puzzles. Each one of them is like a puzzle. But you've got to find a weakness to exploit to get in a position, because you can only climb up certain parts of their bodies. They're fucking huge. Like, it's really really cool, man. It's a thinker. Like, and there's very little in way of a tutorial or anything like that. It barely tells you anything starting off.
I played Ico and I got really frustrated because it wouldn't tell you anything about it, and you just had to sort of make your way through. You had to make your way through it without any indication of what to do whatsoever. And I kind of like a little bit of a pointer here and there, and it's but anyway, yeah.
Just shout at your horse.
I could just shout at my horse.
Sometimes a disembodied voice tells you what to do. There's a disembodied voice in
it. Like in the game or in your head?
Yeah, it's in the game. I hope. And they give you clues sometimes if you're stuck. I've been stuck on a Colossus, but it's never like that frustrating. You're like, I don't want to play this anymore.
I don't want to play this anymore, but I have to. I'm about 30 days.
I know a young man, like, he's a teenager, and he's played it and he didn't like it for the very reason that it didn't tell you what the fuck you were supposed to do, because there's no pointers, indicators, markers, any of that shit.
So do you just jake about until you find Colossus?
No, what you do is you raise your sword in the air, and there's a very subtle beam that comes off your sword, which when it's concentrated in a certain direction, it doesn't fucking tell you how to do this, you have to work it out.
But it's basically an indication of what to do, isn't it?
Yeah, but nobody tells you you have to go to do that with your sword. Yeah. So you're like, oh, what's this about?
I guess when the first hour I'm like, then shouting at my horse and putting it off.
It seems almost like they're trying to sell you a life lesson and that nobody tells you what to do.
They couldn't be fucked.
That's just story, right? Shall we put in... Like, we've finished the game there, so we put in pointers what to do. Just fucking, I don't fucking care, mate.
It's got debut in 10 minutes, just put in that box. Oh, right, I'll just make the sword light or something like
that. It's weird as well, it's like, because it's a PS2 game, but it was remastered for PS3, and I'm playing the PS3 remaster on
a PS4
console.
Ooh. I was going to ask that, actually, if it was just a direct copy or if it was like an HD remake.
It's not a HD remake, it's like polished slightly.
But it's blocky still.
Blocky as fuck still.
Is it still fuzzy?
Like, it's a wee bit fuzzy on the details, yes. Mm. Right, details are a bit fuzzy, but it still looks smashing.
Smashing. I don't know, man, I gotta put me off straight away. Like, I'm so bad for...
Yeah, it's not for everyone, like.
For graphic. No, it's not, the game sounds alright, it's just the graphics thing. If I see a little bit that's like fuzzy or that now, I'm just kind of like, nope!
Yeah.
Like, I watched a video the other day and it was Metal Gear Solid 1 and like Snake has no face.
He has no face.
It's just a flat bit, and I was, oh man, I was losing my shit. I was like, oh, I can't believe I used to play that. And be like, look how real that is.
It's like when you see Lara Croft in the original PC games, and she's just like this 3D shape with two little like raisins stuck on her face and a wee smile that's been
and
drawn.
Triangle and triangle tits, like perfect triangle tits. Yeah. I used to love that, man.
Feels like you're stalling, Greg. It feels like you're stalling.
I am a little bit. So you finished, Tommy?
Yeah, okay. Nah, I think it'd be more entertaining to listen to you.
Right, okay. Well, we're here again. If you listened to the last podcast and you thought to yourself, well, you'll be prepared for next time.
Yeah, I am. I've... not really. I have been watching something though, and it's not something new or exciting, I'll be honest. But I'm going to talk about Enemy, because I've not got anything else. In saying that, it's a little side was not.
You are definitely stalling.
I did watch the second episode of Bake Off.
Fantastic. Yes! Anyway. I did as well. Do you know what? We can talk about that rather than fucking wait. That, like, I would implore absolutely anyone to go back and watch an episode, surely for... What's it called again at the end? Is it
Showstopper.
Showstopper, that's one. There's a showstopper where basically the baker makes this most amazingly artistic thing based on what the theme of the week is, and it was bread last week. And this guy...
Bread week.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I heard you told me.
It was, he made like a properly artistic lion's face. Like, you know, when you see like the adverts for the Lion King in the theatre, and so you see the...
It's nothing like that.
No, I mean, like, it's the composition of it.
Oh, right.
And like the colours and everything is fucking amazing.
And the best thing about it was, see, when they were talking to him about that, he has like no personality whatsoever. So I thought he is not going to pull that off. Someone's obviously made it for him and said, right, so when you go in, right, here's a design, just lay the bread out and make it. Because we were telling him, and he was just like, oh, it's the best thing I've ever seen. He's like, cheers, right? Fucking hell! Show us a way to get this guy. He's a prison warden in the way, so that kind of makes sense.
It makes sense, yeah.
But, so, little note for that. Anyway, I've been watching Sons of Anarchy. Again.
Is this the second time you watched it?
I got this.
As well. Have you seen it all, or did you stop?
I stopped the season 5 purely because, on the way home from football one night, one of my mates told me what happened at the end of season 5 by mistake, and the whole season's a build up or something. It's like building up. Oh, what's going to happen? It's like, I can't sit and watch fucking 12 episodes of this. I know what happens, so I stopped. And then it's all finished, it's all on Netflix, the whole thing, 7 seasons is all now available on Netflix. So I thought, okay, what, I'm going to go back and watch it. And not so much I'm not going to so much talk about Sons of Anarchy as a thing, but more like, I've never sat and watched, rewatched a TV show before. I've never like made a conscious effort to go back and watch something, and see you go back and rewatching it, man, you pick up so much more stuff that you've never ever realised.
No, you kind of would do, wouldn't you? Because you know what's coming, and so you're looking for the thing.
The thing is, I watched it that long ago, I can't really remember what's happening. I remember, like, all the highlights, if you like, the big points, but I can't remember how it all pieces together. But if we're talking about, like, background characters and that, and, like, the histories of the characters, I'm like, this actually makes a lot more sense. It's a lot more in-depth than what I figured it was. Like, beforehand, it was just, like, a bunch of guys on motorbikes went about killing folk, right, and swaggered about. Just kind of like, yeah, that's pretty much all it was. Let's drink some whiskey and beat some folk up.
Yeah.
But see, now it's not, man. It's actually really a really in-depth show, and I can't really talk much more about it without giving like, what it's about away.
Well, you made a valiant effort to stall.
Yeah. But thanks, man. But bake off this week's... what was it this week?
Shit, I can't even mind.
Souffle week.
It is desserts.
It's a big one.
There's creme brulees in it that they have to make.
I like creme brulees, but I'm
still... You should watch it, Tommy.
You should watch it, man. You should watch it anyway. Right.
It's okay. You guys can watch it in time.
Tune in next week for our next week's Bake Off update. Right.
Amazing.
News.
That worked well.
That was it.
Shit. That was so. We're on a news, which we have as another regular part of this Desert Whale diet. This is like main course kind of thing. Like that was reading, watching planes, kind of like the old starter.
The starter, eh? The soup, if you will.
And this is the main course. The beef.
The beef, the meat.
The meat. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Go on then.
I don't have any news this week. No, I'm kidding. It's one thing I read today, and it's quite a big, it could be quite a big thing. Did you guys know that Nintendo have now teamed up with Universal Studios, right? And there's talk of them making a whole Nintendo Land as a theme park.
That'd fucking kick ass.
Right? Yeah. Right?
Tell me more.
Well, basically, they were talking, like, there's Universal, because they don't know if it's going to go into Universal in Orlando, because there's a Universal in Japan, I think there's one going to be in Dubai soon, and there's going to be one in, I think it was China. No, Korea.
Are these all Nintendo lands that are going to be over the world?
No, this is Universal, but they've teamed up, so they've, right. So they've bought it. So they don't know where it's going to go, but there's talk of them making a Nintendo land, right?
Somewhere.
Yeah, and they reckon the Nintendo are going to get involved and make the rides and all that sort of stuff using other characters. But that isn't my news. My news is...
It should be.
On the back of that, and this is what I don't know if this is a good or bad thing.
Okay.
Nintendo have come out and said that there's a strong possibility that they will get involved again in the world of cinema. Right?
Oh,
they've made one movie.
Super Mario Brothers.
Yep.
Quality film.
1993, which we all know was...
Big Bobby Hoskins was there.
Big Bobby Hoskins, wasn't it? And even he hated it. He came out and said it was shit.
I said the Goombas looked terrible. They were like 9 foot tall.
Aye.
And had tiny little heads.
Yeah.
They were weird. Or were they the turtles?
No, that was Goomba. It was nothing like.
It was nothing like it.
Mario. And then the police car. Had like vines in it.
It's fucking seedy, man. That movie, if you go back and watch it, it's fucking seedy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I want to watch it. Anyway,
so they're talking about basically going ahead and bringing out new films.
I bet you they would be fantastic.
Do you think so?
Yes.
Well, basically, the reason that they're talking about doing it is because they've had characters in movies recently. Like, Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, they had, which is excellent.
Bowser was in it.
Yeah, sure.
And new Adam Sandler film, Pixels, which apparently absolutely slated.
Yeah, every film he comes out with new gets fucking slated. He always makes money, so...
He's finished. Well, he's not. He's finished as far as making good films. He was finished a long time.
long time ago.
Critically, I think he's finished, but as long as they keep making money.
I saw a very pedantic thing about this film. It's called Pixels, but they're actually cubes, so they're actually voxels.
All right.
So we even got that wrong.
Well, apparently there's a lot of gamers have come out and said there's
fucking...
Yeah, there's no game culture at all.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Apparently.
It's just got Pac-Man.
It's got Pac-Man in it, and it's got
Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong's in it, and the dog from Duck Hunt. So
the dog from Duck Hunt.
The dog for Duck Hunt. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's an interesting thing. So they're talking about the characters are going to be using films. It's Star Fox going to maybe go to Star Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Kirby.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Well loved character, yeah. Kirby.
Metroid Prime.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, pretty cool.
And there's another one. I can't remember who it was. I should have really wrote it down. Zelda.
Get on it, Nintendo. Do it right now. Stop listening to our podcast and get it done.
No, they've just come out and said, but what they're saying is because they've struck a deal with Universal, obviously Universal are a fucking huge, massive fucking movie
people.
That's the one that I was looking for. They are the movie
guys.
Yeah, so they don't know. They reckon they could cross over, and I don't know how they're going to do it, because they're talking about remaking a Mario movie as well, but I don't know how they're going to do it.
It just didn't work.
I don't think it would work
in live action.
It would have to be CGI.
I think it has to be CGI. If they make CGI, it's got legs, because you can have films, you can have TV series, you can keep it true to the characters, you could sell more toys, you could do a video game based on the fucking film.
I reckon Star Fox could fit into something like, when you look at like Rocket Raccoon that's in Guardians, that worked quite well. That could work quite well. The Star Fox characters.
If they are doing it, I would far prefer it to be CGI over.
I would prefer it to be CGI.
Metroid would really work if it was like real.
If a person transformed into a ball, you've seen them transform into tanks, airplanes, cars, trucks. Metroid Prime transformed into a ball.
Be slightly less impressive. At the same time, Metroid would probably be the only one that would work doing it as a live action film.
Zelda might.
That's true. Sorry, Zelda.
But you guys aren't any the same as myself. I'm not into like the whole fantasy genre.
Fucking
I'm
fantasy.
Not really into fantasy either. Like,
but Zelda falls into that.
You can't watch it. I'll watch it, and I'll tell you how good it is.
And we'll just tell you that we don't fucking care.
We don't like the watching, no. I watch Zelda and Bake Off. Whoop whoop.
I think the best part about what you've just said is Nintendo theme parks.
Yeah, I know, that's what's very class.
Even if it doesn't happen, I'm going to make one up in my head and just go. That sounds fantastic.
Can I buy tickets?
Yes, you can. No, in fact, they're free. You can come along. Yeah, you can come for a journey into my mind for free.
I wouldn't pay to go into his mind, man.
You have to hold hands to get into my mind.
That's fine, I can do that.
You and Tommy have to hold hands to
That's
get
fine.
Into my mind. That's fine.
We have to hold hands to get into my attic.
We should film it sometime.
Yeah.
We should film our ascension to your attic sometime. That's pretty fucking
Nintendo
cool.
Nintendo Land. I think it sounds fucking sweet.
Absolutely, yeah. Good stuff. Can I jump in on that? Because I have got some stuff. I'm going to read a wee review that I've written today. Because I don't think it would... I don't think I can do any justice just by doing it off the cuff, this next piece of news.
Okay.
So, my piece of news is about Stephen Amell, a.k.a. Arrow, having his match at WWE's SummerSlam. And here is my little review of how he did.
Did you
never
know
had anybody ever mention it?
Are you sure? No. Oh, well, he did.
Who was he fighting?
The match was Stephen Amell and a guy called Neville, who was...
Neville!
He was previously Adrian Neville, but for some reason they dropped the first name, against...
Because Neville sounds cool.
No, like everyone in Britain was just kind of, what the fuck are you doing? Christ's sake. And then they were against a couple of guys called Stardust... who is son of
Goldust.
Dusty Rhodes. No, he's Goldust's brother, in real life. And a guy called, formerly known as Wade Barrett, but he's now King Barrett, because he won King of the Ring.
Wrestling has changed so much.
They marketed this match as a comic book fight, because Stardust had been... He just started to taunt Stephen Amell, and they started up a bit of like a Twitter battle or whatever, or a Facebook battle or something like that. But it sort of grew arms and legs, and Stephen Amell was asked to attend, and he was asked to attend eventually to be in a match at SummerSlam, because Arrow is a big show, big draw for money, big draw to get people in. So here's my wee review. The Arrow star turned WWE superstar put on a gutsy and confident performance for someone who's not committed his life to practicing the art of professional wrestling. He represented the comic book characters well by donning the Arrow vest style thing on the way to the ring, wore the hood down to the ring, but when he got into the ring, he sort of took it off and was just a guy, a big muscly guy in shorts.
Oh man, that's shit.
I know, I was really disappointed with that, but he took... a straight up taking no shit attitude towards villains, which again represent comic book.
Did he say he failed the city?
No, but there was loads of signs in the crowd. Loads of signs in the crowd that had kind of, you failed this city, blah, blah. And
take his shorts off.
Not at any point, no.
Oh, man.
But
I'm not watching this.
His first interaction in the match, and this is like, it's very much, it is scripted, obviously, but they do hit each other. But Stephen Amell just kind of went straight in for the fucking, he just went in for the jugular and just booted this guy and like properly fucking booted him in the chest. And you could tell it was a total stiff shot. And the guy was sort of sitting in the corner, winded, going, "Fucking calm down, man! We're like doing each other that fucking hard." He actually had several really good spots, including an impressive 10-foot crossbody leap to the outside. So that's like the height of a wrestling ring, which is I think it's a good 10 to 12 foot tall jumping out over these two guys. And he's like, these guys are glorified stuntmen, mm-hmm. and he jumps out to the outside of the ring. It's quite impressive for somebody, especially I guess, to do that. Mm-hmm. They had, what else did they do? The two bad guys. He ended up winning. He was on the winning side along with Neville, who is a Geordie wrestler who, whilst possessing an extremely impressive physique and an equally impressive set of acrobatic and gymnastic abilities, does look a bit more like a handsome humanoid version of the Green Goblin. Okay. He has got a really long chin, and he's got these super pointy ears.
Oh, shit, man.
But he's phenomenally impressive as an athlete and all that. But it was quite cool. It was quite cool to see.
Did that Owen?
To see it. Yeah.
You weren't listening to him, were you?
No, I wasn't fucking listening at all, was he? He's just sitting there going, "Wrestling's gay. Wrestling's gay. Wrestling's
gay." It was when you said, like, we had each other, his face, he was like,
I heard him just going, "Ugh." Well, if you're in any doubt about that sort of thing, that these guys don't get hurt in the ring, just do yourself a favor and type in John Cena broken nose on Google. This happened a couple of weeks ago, and man, like, there's he stays true to the whole kind of, this other guy put your nose in the other side of his face. I swear his nose was like, but his nose was like next to his ear. It was fucking gross, but it was pretty cool anyway.
It's quite a cool idea. It's strange how they've managed to get a comic book wrestling crossover.
How far back do you think it's been marketed? Do you think it's been marketed from the start?
Nah, definitely not, man. No. I think Arrow was one of these, because when Arrow first came out, man, I was I remember.
No, I don't mean like they made a TV show just so specifically so it would.
No.
If they've had a Twitter battle, do you think the Twitter battle is mock?
It perfectly could have been. They could have been in talks for ages about it, and most of it is scripted. Most of these things are so, but they did it really, really.
It was well done.
It was well done though. Like it went back like a couple of months and everything, and like they started to market the matches between Neville and Stardust as like, these guys are proper, like, this is a comic book hero and this is a comic book villain, and they started putting like their graphics before matches into comic book style presentation.
Right.
And it, like the vignette before the match was all in comic book style presentation. It was actually really cool.
But actually, just think about it now, it's not the first crossover of football they kind of had, because Edge the wrestler is going to be in Flash.
That's it.
He's Atom Smasher, so he must have had some sort of like link in.
Yeah,
he's going to be in that. I wouldn't be surprised if fucking like Stardust or that like just appears in an Arrow getting shagged up the bottom by Neville.
He's just, whenever he has like a bit of dialogue to say, he just sounds so unintimidating, even though he is a Geordie. But it's kind of like these big, like the big American guys going, "I'll wreck you, man," and he's like, "Hurry, man! I'm gonna show you who's the winner, mate. I'm gonna beat you up, like, you know.
I'm gonna air you out."
It's like Ant and Dec joining WWE.
Hurry, man!
Hurry,
man!
Anyway,
so that's cool.
It was pretty cool. Sweet. And that's the end of our involvement with wrestling on this podcast, presumably.
So. Yes.
It will never die.
I'm going to mention it every week.
News update. Okay, I have a bit of news. No.
Wait.
We'll start again.
We can edit it out.
You probably won't, though, will you?
Nah, I won't.
Okay, my news is the Resident Evil 2 remake is now officially underway.
Ooh.
Wait.
Like full on remake?
Yeah.
Well, like the HD remake. Like the first HD remake that came out a few months ago.
You were playing that.
Digital download, £15. Give me that.
Take my money.
Take it.
And now they're going to remake the second one, which is quite cool.
I thought that was it.
Yeah, no, right. great.
It's really cool. But it's going to take longer. There's no release date for it because, well, they reckon it'll take longer. Because the HD remake, the recent one, of the first original Resident Evil, it wasn't based off of the PlayStation 1 original game. It was based off of one of the other remakes, like in the GameCube.
The GameCube one was ace.
So, but there's never been like a PlayStation, a Resident Evil 2 remake since the PlayStation 1 version.
Right.
So there's a lot more work involved in it. And there's been this other group who have been, well, in the community, that have been doing it. I don't know how long they've been doing it for, but before this was made official, they'd been working on their own remake called Resident Evil 2 Reborn.
All
right. Aye, and there's indie game developers are remaking it, and there's a YouTube trailer.
Indie.
I
don't know why it's got a different meaning now.
But
sorry.
And their own version was on. There's a gameplay trailer, and their own version of the trailer was on YouTube, and that Capcom have asked them to shut that down.
Oh really? So yeah. It's finished.
So they weren't bothered their arse. Until they decided they were going to make their own one. And then they asked these guys to shut it down.
That's devastating.
However, they've since asked them to talk to them officially. Whether that's to become part of the team or give them some insight or what, I don't know. But they have asked them to be some kind of part of it.
Oh, that's all right. Cool. Except that would be devastating.
It looks really cool. Like, if you watch the trailer, it's fucking real cool. Because it's like the perspective isn't the... like the third person perspective of the original game, it's more like the over the shoulder perspective
from
like
five.
Okay,
so I'm playing completely different then, man.
Mm. Will it be better or worse from that perspective?
I don't know. I'm really not sure. That's so long since I played that game.
Is it like if Resident Evil 2's got like the hard camera thing, isn't it? Where it's like it just stays and you just follow it. I'm not a big fan of those games.
I don't mind them, man. I was brought up on them, so it doesn't bother me. It didn't really bother me that much in the other remake, the first remake that I played there.
Yeah. It'd be interesting though, because I think it might maybe take away from it, because the bits I remember, like the very beginning in the shop, came when you're going in the gun shop and the guy's like, you can't get in, blah blah, and he gets fucking munched. Like the whole appeal of that was the fact that the camera was in the top of the room and it was like you had to try and find a way out as the zombies move from the front of the screen towards your character. Now you'll just be like running about in like third person almost.
It would completely change it.
It could be good though. It could be good.
Could be good. But that's not to say they'll go that way, but that's what the indie developers were doing. So, it'd be quite cool.
Indie.
These indie guys, eh?
Indie guys. Anything else? I've got a little tiny little bit of news that won't affect you, won't appeal to you guys at all. GTA 5 is getting its movie editor for consoles in September.
Movie editor?
It came out on PC, so basically whenever you play online or that, you can go at movie editor. So anything, so you get like free reign of the whole game. So you can make up your own movies using GTA and using all the music and all that sort of stuff.
I bet you some fantastic movies come out of the back of that.
There've already been stuff online. Someone recreated the Friends intro someone's recreated the Friends intro using all the characters from GTA and it looks ace. I seen one the other day as well, somebody run Ken Arthur, you know, TV show, the kids cartoon.
Yeah,
someone done that was shit, but someone's done Arthur as well. So
every day when you're walking down the street.
Yeah, that one. But man, it's a cool idea. Like, it's just, and I mean it's already got like job editor, it's already got like level editor on it. You can make your own missions and stuff, so they're actually giving like, it's almost like they're giving the mod guys like free reign to do what they want.
Yeah, it almost seems like, yeah, like you're right, it seems like they're almost like secretly marketing themselves, or like secretly advertising job opportunities.
Yeah,
it seems like they might be doing that with Mario Editor as well, when they're saying like, we can't be fucked making any more Mario games, you make one.
You do it yourself, maybe.
And, oh, that's a really good level, right, okay, we'll get in touch with you and say, do you want to come and make the next Mario?
Oh, well, I made a mission on GTA, I made a race on GTA 5, it's called Quads of Fun.
Quads of Fun.
Terrible pun. But basically, it was meant to be saying lots of fun, but I was really late, I made Quads of Fun and then got some of the guys that I played with to test it out, and let me tell you, it's not fun. I got very, very, very bad feedback. It was basically like a big.
Never give up.
It was basically like a big massive race down all the side streets. And I thought this would be funny because it'd be really hard, and everyone was just like, "This is fucking sad." And I was like, "Alright, okay, cool." So that never made it to.
Never saw the light of the day.
No, it's still on there though. I had another one as well, another mission which I made.
Was that like a five-a-side one where there's just bazookas?
Oh, I tried to make that, but it didn't work. I tried to make a five-a-side thing where everyone drives lawnmowers, but yeah. Man, that would still work. I guarantee that would work. If I could get that, that would be brilliant, but I can't.
Report back to us when you got that done, yeah?
Nah, okay. Okay. Yeah, cool. So
that's your lot this week. News. On to the dessert. Welcome to the dessert. Of your Desert Whale meal this evening, or this morning, or this afternoon, or whenever you're listening to this podcast, how are we feeling about the food analogies for this podcast?
Oh, great! Aye.
I'll not try it again.
But it was good for one. It was good for one.
Well, I thought I'd go for all three, make it a rounded meal.
I mean for like the next podcast.
Oh right, okay, like you right.
Say. Oh, so for the next podcast, we'll have another analogy.
Right, aye.
Like the nah.
Yeah, right. Anyway,
or no analogy.
Anyway, this is another dessert that you'll never have had before, and it's delicious, and it's as sweet as any other brand new feature that we've ever given you.
We've done this before.
The Perfect Ten. No, aye.
Yeah, we have.
No, I haven't.
Not like this. We haven't.
Yeah, yeah. This is like a modification on a classic.
Is it? I thought we'd done this before.
No.
It's like no dessert you ever had. It's like, oh, there's a tiramisu. And you come in and it's like, there's a tiramisu. And if you play
this,
there's
a tiramisu. That's
not a knife. This is a knife.
Yeah, that's pretty much that's right.
Yeah, so basically what we're going to do is we're going to sit here and talk about what our perfect tens are for games, comics, books, films, movies, whatever. And then we're just going to have a wee discussion about that and see... What
do you agree or not agree?
What think's quality banter?
What's quality banter?
Don't know. I'll start off rather than having to ask you the question.
I was willing to start, but seeing as you want to, you can do it.
Right, fine. Well, I'm going to start by passing it over to Tommy.
Okay, thanks. That's good for me because I only have one thing I could think of that was a perfect 10.
Exactly, and I know why it is, and that's why I'm passing it over to you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Is it my turn to say what it is?
It is.
Preacher. The Vertigo comic book series.
Which is quality.
Run for 67 or 60 odd, some odd issues. Written by Garth Ennis, art by Steve Dillon. Yes, it is. It's quality.
It is quality.
Absolutely fucking quality. 9 volumes in graphic novel form. It is one of the first proper series that I read from start to finish, to be fair as well. So yep. it will hold a special place in my heart because of that. But, man, the mix, the humour... The violence, the story, the characters.
So dark as well. There's certain bits of it that are...
It is horrendously dark. But the characters are so well-written, human and likeable that it's the characters that you really relate to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all these fucked up things are happening and like there's a vampire involved and the Saint of Colours
character
is one of the coolest fucking comic book characters ever.
Yeah.
Like, all these people... are really human and relatable at the same time. So it's a character driven human story. Everybody's got even a human backstory, like you're saying, the colours. But that's what the big attraction is. And it's one of those series, and not every series can say this, even the really well liked and well popular series that ends and finishes really strongly.
Absolutely. It's almost like it ends almost. It's almost underplayed to the rest of the series, the end of it, like with, well, no, I obviously won't say it happens, but it's almost like it's kind of, it's stripped right down at the end of it.
Yes.
And it's a brilliant ending. Yeah, absolutely brilliant ending. Yeah. As you're saying, it's like, it's all those things. It's funny, it's brutal, and it's this, that, and the other thing. But one of the things that I liked about it so much is that it just doesn't take itself too seriously.
No.
And one of the most enduring images that I've had from it, and every time I think back to Preacher, it's one of the first pages that I think of, is the bit where this is the worst, I can't remember the dude's name.
Hairstar
is trying on like different wigs and stuff, adjusting the hats because Jesse Custer's put a big fucking knife slash along the middle of his big bald head, which so it looks like a cock basically. And he's trying on little sort of like shortcut pink wigs and stuff. It's just
That's
brilliant.
That is a brilliant bit. Yeah. There's loads of bits, like, when you think about your favourite bits, you pick a bit and you pick a bit, but none of the bits, they're all bits like that. The bits that are like little sidebars that have very little to do with the big... If somebody asked you what Preacher was about, you wouldn't start telling them that story about that straight away. You'd be like, oh, well, you'd be like, oh, well, it's about this and that, and Jesse Custer, and he gets the word of God, the blah, blah, blah. That's what's cool about it, man.
I think, certainly from our perspective, Greg and I, it's probably the influence that we took to start trying to write our own comic, and which is called The Plight, which will be out at some point soon. And
we can say that.
Like, we can't actually say that. It's good.
Tommy's finished the art. Yes. But that was definitely an influence that we took, because did we start reading it at the same time?
Yeah.
And then we finished it about the same time, and it's brilliant. It's how to write comics, basically. It's got everything. It's
got that thing as well where it's like we described it before. Ages ago, it's like if somebody ever says to you, oh, I went to comic books, and if anyone goes, oh, comics are for kids, give them Preacher. Yeah, and say, okay, go and read that to your children.
Absolutely.
And see what and see what they think.
Definitely.
Because your kids have fucked up dreams.
Yes, they will. But you're right, though. You're like looking at all of the comics that you have, and looking at all of the comics here in Greg's attic on your bookshelf, when I go home and look at all of the comics that I have on my shelf, the standout one is the Preacher series.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. It's if someone was looking to get into comics, the first one of the first ones you'd give them is Preacher Volume 1, and it's great.
It's just great. It's just like a drug, man. Once you have the first one, you just got to read the rest. And because it's, you say, only 9 volumes, but that's pretty short compared to some other series.
Yeah, definitely.
It's attainable, you know. If you
doesn't need to be any longer than that.
It doesn't really, no.
I had a little sort of, not a spin-off, but there was I think Volume 7, was like Cassidy gets his own little bit, and Cassidy sort of fucks off and meets that guy at that party who does bad shit, and it's like, I think it's like 4 or 5 issues are all about Cassidy.
Yeah,
his own little story.
I think in that era, or that kind of bracket in the series, Custer was, he was doing the same thing in the Louisiana Swamps or something as well at the same time. I think they all kind of broke up. All three, the main cast broke up. They went and done their own stuff for a while.
But no, I'd
drink. They all came back together they're just so.
I'd definitely agree with you. It's quality.
If you haven't read it, you should. And that's coming from someone who, I feel like a hypocrite saying it, because there's loads of stuff that I should have seen that I haven't seen before, but yeah, like. Preacher is just that good. If you're a comic book fan, you owe it to yourself to read it in its entirety, and it's just that good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a goddamn perfect 10.
It's a perfect 10. I've read a lot of comics.
I've read a lot.
for a single, I'd say probably Watchmen. I'd say that's a 10 out of 10. But that's another story. For another day. For another perfect 10. Those girls are perfect.
I've got a few, which surprised me, to be honest, because
you hate everything.
I fucking hate everything. I'm really good at hating things. It comes very natural to me. I've got 3 games and a movie.
Alright, okay.
And I'm probably going to go with the movie, but I'll give a little chuck away to the game.
Okay, right.
Because the game's a funny one. For me, based on playing it from beginning to end, and then playing it again, and then playing it multiplayer wise, perfect 10. Portal 2.
That's quality.
Portal 2 is a fucking brilliant game, because it's not a shooter, it's not an action game, there's no one dies, there's no blood, there's no story. It's a fucking puzzle game, and that's all it is. It says, I bet you can't get from there to there because you're not smart enough.
Yeah.
And you have to fucking figure it out.
And when you do it, you feel like a king.
You do, you feel like an absolute champ. Especially when you're playing the co-op levels, and the guy you're playing with is a fucking retard. so you can work it all out and be like, right, yeah, I'll tell you what to do, just shoot there and shoot there. And fine. But anyway, that's not what I'm talking about. But Portal 2, yeah, 10 out of 10.
So it also has one of the best outro songs of any game of ever.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Actually, Steve Merchant's in it, and he's really, really good in it.
Yeah.
He's really good in it. But the movie, 10 out of 10, see if you agree with this, is an old, not an, say old, it's actually 98, it was Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, Saving Private Ryan's another classic.
It's one of my favourite films ever. Like, I can't get bored of watching Saving Private Ryan.
I will interject very, 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 very quickly. If you're an alien masquerading yourself as a human being amongst people on Earth and you're listening to this podcast, this is how you integrate yourself into society. Listen to what we're saying just now. Say you've seen these things and people will just talk. And you'll be fine. So.
It's like when we talk about Metal Gear Solid and Richard stays quiet.
I'm not an alien, honest. Tell me more though.
No, I was Metal Gear Shop. Saving Private Ryan is just an absolutely brilliant film. I'm only going to get people who basically say, "Oh, but it's a made up story, like set in the war, and the war wasn't really like that." And it's like, I don't care.
That's what your story is, man. You want some entertainment.
Like, that's fucking pedantry, isn't it? Yeah. Like, it didn't really happen, so it's not a story. Neither did, like, any comic book, neither did any fiction ever. Yeah. So, shut up. Like, but what's the point in saying that? Like,
that's the thing as well, because I was reading about it today, and they were saying, like, there was actually sort of veterans who were at D-Day and got asked to go along to the premiere to watch it. And the first 27 minutes scene is, like, all about Omaha Beach, like, storming Omaha Beach. 27 minutes for one scene, that's ridiculous. That's, like, half a film. Like, yeah. Normal, like, timings. But apparently they said it's the most realistic thing they've ever seen.
Compared to
every other movie they've seen that done World War. And for me, that's enough. Like, if somebody was there and says, do you know what else is Stephen Spence from this as well? Is like, because obviously, I'm assuming you've both seen it,
Yeah. I have seen it, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen
it. Sorry, Tom, have you read it? Have you read the book that came out?
No, I have seen the movie. I've never read the book, if there is one.
No, there is. There's loads. What was I going to say? It's the whole kind of sort of team thing. Kind of like they get a team of guys together, and it's like each person in the team plays a little part, and they go away on a little mission, whatever. I think that for me, basically, like sort of like started my love of like team things, if that makes sense. Like, where every person plays a little role. Like, I love that. I love like how there's like games like Borderlands or that is always like there's four people, everyone plays a little part, and everyone's got their own little responsibility. I don't know what it is. It's almost like a mini story within a story, if that makes sense. But yeah. Man, Saving Private Ryan is one of the best movies ever made.
This Normandy Beach at the start, the Normandy
That's
Beach
Normandy invasion,
at the start is one of the most harrowing scenes of any film ever.
Yep.
And it's one of the coolest things that came on the back of that is the success of that film bred the inclusion of that mission on Medal of Honor Frontline that you could play.
Yep.
The Normandy invasion, and that is again one of the most amazing.
The original Call of Duty as well, man, was fucking fantastic. Superb. Also, as well, also spawned life into another thing that I'd probably have a 10 out of 10, if maybe not a 10 out of 10, but not kicking arse off it, is Band of Brothers. Have you ever seen Band of Brothers?
Band of Brothers is quality as well, yeah.
So expanded that. Watch it, Tommy!
Oh, well.
Watch it. Watch Band of Brothers and watch the Bake Off. Yeah, watch them one after another.
I'm not watching that.
One episode each, yeah. Like, just to sort of bring
because
it back
you'll fucking need
to
it
to help let you rise after yes. an episode of Band of Brothers.
As you watch someone get shot in the past, you're going to like, oh, I need something else to cheer me up. I'll watch Biscuit Wee, motherfucker. But yeah, it's quality.
Yeah, there you go.
So yeah,
you.
That's pretty much me for Band of Brothers. Two so far, like they're not Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan. You can't mean for
I get what you mean. What? That was good, man. Well done.
I've got one. I'm not sure you guys will be as like effusive in your agreement as for my one.
Probably not.
I was going to go for a game, and I was going to select Super Mario Brothers 3. Which was initially from the NES. It's just one of the most brilliant games ever. Like, you can still get it for 3DS. I'm sure you can still get it. You can probably get it for Wii U. You can probably get it for here, there, and everywhere.
You can probably get it on Mario Maker.
It's a brilliant, brilliant game. Then I was thinking that's maybe too far back, and I went for the next sort of pixel generation and said Streets of Rage 2 is still a brilliant, brilliant game.
It's an excellent game.
Yeah, I went for the next generation after that and thought GoldenEye is probably the best of the next gen after that.
Yeah.
Even though I've never played it in any other capacity than multiplayer. And I kind of thought that games are you can get good games basically. And then I thought, right, okay, I'll maybe do a film. I thought The Dark Knight is another fantastic film. And I thought, we could talk about that forever though as well. So I went for something a little bit more different, and it's a TV series, but it's only part of a TV series. It's one that I grew up with, and one that I think is still a gold mine for TV episodes. As
Kieran and Kel.
I wish I was that into Kieran and Kel.
Kel looks on his shoulder.
It's the Simpsons season 1 to 8.
All right, okay.
I still think that's like 1989 or 1990 through to about 1997. But it's not just because the episodes are funny. It's not just because some of them are just timeless classic television episodes. It's the fact that I can still relate to a lot of these episodes nearly 20 years after they were initially broadcasted. And for something that almost seems as outdated now, a format as drawn television shows like The Simpsons, where it's just kind of it's animated on, and it almost seems like it's a flick board sometimes, but
some of them are really old, like when you look at the animation,
but they have such fantastic stories. And I was thinking about it today, and I was trying to think about the best episodes, and it's not like just the funniest moments. It's where I remember there's one in the first season where Bart keeps doing really badly at school, and he keeps on flunking assessments, and he gets told that if you don't pass this one, then you're out, and it's like you're out on your arse, and you can't go on like a trip to like Krustylander or something. I can't remember what it was, but
Krustylander episode was fucking amazing as well.
not at all. I'll open up a little bit for in a couple of minutes, but it's the fact that when he fails, he breaks down, and he really, really wanted to succeed, and he tried his hardest, and then he realises that through his studying the night before and falling asleep and everything, he did absorb some information, and he does get an extra credit thing because he says how he feels is like how this historical figure must have felt when they lost.
Oh, right, okay, so he relates to it.
Yeah, and that relates, and it's brilliant. There's another one where Homer thinks he's eating poisoned fish, and he feels like he has to face mortality, and he tells Bart how to shave, and he listens to Lisa playing the saxophone, and he goes and sits and listens to the Bible, and it's heart wrenching.
He listens to it. He doesn't read the Bible. He gives it all to
He sits and listens to it, and then you think he's died, and then Marge comes and finds him in the morning, and his saliva's still warm, and he's alive, and it's just like, oh my god, what a perfect
it's quite deep episode. It's quite when you think about it, for The Simpsons.
Yeah, and but in contrast to that, there's just so many great episodes that are just ludicrous. Like another one that I thought was the Gummy Venus de Milo episode, where he goes to the sweets convention and rips
out candy bars.
There's all of the Treehouse of Horror episodes, the Barber Quartet episode, the Flamin' Mose episode.
The Barber Quartet episode is ace. Yeah. Love that episode.
That Flamin' Mose episode, which I still maintain that the parody of the Cheers song that they do in that is still better than the actual Cheers song. it's still better. There is just a rich and extensive level of quality of these episodes, and some aren't as good as the rest, but it's just phenomenal. Perfect 10 for me for those episodes.
Simpsons,
and as you say, there's the Krusty Land. There's so many episodes that you can't knock that as a series. And
no,
and it's been a long, long time since there's ever been a cartoon like that can transcend kids' TV through and like adults getting it, and it's timeless.
It got a bit
for me.
Ropey the way.
Well, that's
it
what
did
I said.
Get a bit ropey because it wasn't. It didn't. Well,
it was shite.
It was shite, and it didn't keep that timeless feeling to it.
That's
because
that's
the invention of. Well, this is just a theory, but with the invention of the Family Guys.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
they're not telling proper stories. It's just a series of jokes. Off-cuts, one-liners are completely kind of unrelated to each other. The actual story feeling that you got with The Simpsons, it was completely different, but that was brilliant when that first came out, and that was funny as fuck.
And then, it was.
And then I was like, oh man, Family Guy's well, but The Simpsons is crap. And then, but The Simpsons kind of tried to mirror that, I think.
They did in some instances, and it worked sometimes and didn't work others, but nothing will ever surpass those first 8 seasons for me for The Simpsons. Like, when they brought the film out, they brought a lot of the writers back from those first 8 seasons to make sure that the film was a success.
The film was class.
And that's it. It's because of the writers that they brought in, and on the back of that success, those writers took up jobs at The Simpsons again, and they started writing episodes again. And this was when it was really ropey, from like 98, 99 through to about, I think it was 2005, the film, or maybe 2006, sometime around that. When the film came out, it started going back uphill. There were still shite episodes, and there still are shite episodes, but those ones, season 1 to 8, are just they're like some of the best television I've ever seen.
They are
you never get bored of Simpsons,
and you feel totally timeless. Like, the way I gauge it is like that guy Lionel Hutz, Attorney at Law.
Yeah.
Aye.
Phil Hartman, who passed away
in 1998. So I was like, fuck off, he's that, he died in 1998. This guy, I was speaking to Miles, my mate, I was like, there's no way he's died in fucking 1998. I said, I've seen him in loads of Simpsons, but somebody else doing the guy's voice. He's not just stopped doing it. And that, I was like, they can't be that old. I mean, this was just a few years ago when we were talking about it. I was like, they can't be that old. They must be newer than that.
I would have thought the same thing, man. He's in it. Like, I thought he was still in it now.
Yeah, that's it. Like, that's like what I said at the start. These episodes were broadcast nearly 20 years ago. Like, the end of season 8 was around 1997, 98. And that's almost 20 years ago when these things come out.
Do you know what? I always kind of judge it from how old it is, because I used to always love in the introduction, like, scene, I used to always love it when Bart went past with a skateboard and pulled the bus stop away. And they changed that. I'm like, oh no, it was the best bit. But, So, perfect tens all round.
Perfect tens, there you go.
Give that shit a ding.
Ding, 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 ding. A nice wee positive note, and this is the after dinner mint, the coffee, the wee cup of coffee.
The little wet wipe.
Aye, that's it. That's it after a particularly messy bucket of chicken. That was a good one this week, I think, and if you want to hear more from us, then you can search for us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, iTunes, Podigy we're on, Podcast Addict. Have I missed anything?
Something else, but I can't remember what it's called.
Gmail! thedesertwhales@gmail.com.
Aye!
And get in touch.
Thank you for your time.
I literally love you.
Thank you. Thanks, man. Oh, shit.